Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
So, Jeff, here's an interesting story. Actual tax court case. So that should pique your interest.
All right,
right
I'm hooked. Tell me, what's going on?
Well, here's a guy who worked for a company for many years, and he left his $1 million plan account balance, retirement account balance, to his ex-girlfriend.
To his ex-girlfriend?
Yeah. Now, you might say, all right, you know, there might have been something there. He broke up with her in 1989.
It's a long time ago.
A very long time ago.
And in all those years, he never changed his beneficiary.
Never. Even though the company asked him to. Matter of fact, it was so long ago, in this case, they didn't have really fancy beneficiary forms.
Yeah, I was going to ask, would he chisel his beneficiary
something
into stone
like that.
Tablets?
It was actually written on a card, like an index card, a beneficiary form card the company had at that point.
Wow.
And they went, as they computerized over the years, they sent him notification after notification. He just died. So we're talking about many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to update your beneficiary form? They said, because we're going to a computerized format. And if you don't update it, we're going to assume what you had on that handwritten card. That's your selection for beneficiary. And he never changed it. He never changed it. Well, now he's dead and she gets the money. Now, he died unmarried, so he had no spouse and no children. So why is there a court case? Well, with $1 million in a retirement account, you know people are coming out of the woodwork.
Somebody's going to be upset about that.
His two brothers.
Ah, of course.
And they said, no, this can't be what he wanted. He broke up with her in 1989. She can't possibly get the money. The court says, yes, she gets the money. They want now where it stands, and who knows where it is by the time you see this. It could change a little. I don't think so. They want to appeal it. My position, my feeling, they will lose. They will lose every case. They even said that in this court case. He had every chance to change his beneficiary. He opted not to do it.
That's right. It was his money. He can choose to do what he wants. It's like that commercial. It's your money. Do with it what you want.
Yeah. And that's what happened. And now I saw, when I saw the comments to the article, Wall Street Journal ran an article on it. They had tons of comments. And they were in a bunch of camps. Some camps was, she shouldn't get the money. And she had ended up getting married to somebody else and so forth.
That must have been an interesting conversation.
Yeah. I don't even want to go there, right. And so that was part of the camp. People said, well, she shouldn't get the money. It's just not right. And then the brothers should get the money. They're his blood relatives more than her. And in every case, she's going to get the money.
Yeah, I mean, it stands to reason that he's able to do what he wants with his money. Right. And maybe it seems that if he was intentionally passing on these things, that his true intent was to leave his money to his ex-girlfriend. Who knows? Maybe they made some sort of crazy pact back then. They said, if neither one of us finds love, we'll leave each other our retirement accounts.
Well, that's what some people said. And what they said also, and I believe it was in the court case, he's dead. Nobody knows what was in his mind, why he did that. But he purposely did not update that card, that beneficiary card. So now she will get the money. I don't care how many times they appeal. My feeling is they're going to lose. They'll just end up wasting money on attorneys because this goes by operational law. It's a contract.
Seems likely, at the very
least. This is a company plan. They can't just say, you know what, he's right. She shouldn't get the money. They have fiduciary liability.
Who are they to decide what he should do with his money?
Right, but by law they can't.
That's right.
It's an ERISA plan and all of that. So speaking of ERISA, this begs another question. What if instead of being the ex-girlfriend, she was his ex-wife?
Well, if she was his ex-wife, then as long as they were married for at least a year, that she would have had to have been his beneficiary of the plan. There would have been no choice. Here,
right,
with an ex, like a girlfriend, a boyfriend, you know, anyone other than a spouse, it's your choice who you want to make your beneficiary. But with ERISA plans, these are typically 401ks, pension plans, etc., you're oftentimes, if you're married, your spouse is your beneficiary right away. But there is a rule that ERISA has that says if you get married, the plan can allow up to a year before that new spouse becomes the automatic beneficiary.
But suffice, they don't have to. Remember that one case where 6 weeks?
They don't have to. The plan can wait, but they don't have to allow. That was the Kidder case from many years ago.
I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
New spouse, six
That's
weeks.
That's right. 6 weeks after they were married, he died.
She mysteriously died, and she got the money.
Exactly, yes, yes.
After only 6 weeks. So let's go back. Let's say he was the ex-spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say he left his ex-wife on the beneficiary form.
Okay.
Now what would have happened?
Well, probably depends upon what state they live in, right? Because in many states, upon divorce, you are automatically revoked. Unless, and it does happen from time to time, unless your ex-spouse renominates you as the beneficiary afterwards.
Yeah, a number of states, more than half of them actually, have revocation upon divorce laws, which means if you left you got divorced, and a big mistake, very common mistake, you go through the divorce and everything else, and you forget to update your beneficiary form, and you leave now your ex-spouse on there.
Yep.
In those states, she or he is immediately removed as beneficiary.
Yeah, well, you know those laws come from somewhere, right? Like
right.
A bunch of politicians forgot to update their beneficiaries afterwards, and they said, no more, that's it. We're going to make this automatically law.
Right. And in this was a Supreme Court case, by the way, that established this. And even the justices, one of them said, and you could listen to the video, not the video, there's no video in Supreme Court, but the audio you could listen to. And one of them asked the question, but how do we know exactly what I was talking about? What was in his mind? Maybe there was something there and he purposely wanted to leave it to his ex-spouse. Mm-hmm. And they all decided that exactly what you said, that if that was his intention, after the divorce, to make sure your intentions are carried out, you update the beneficiary form and name that ex-spouse so everybody knows that's what you wanted.
All right,
if that's what you want.
So now I see what you're getting at in terms of our initial question. Is it better to be
you
know, a girlfriend or
ex-girlfriend
or an ex-wife had with until you're married? There is no, or like, unless you're married, there is no automatic revocation.
Right.
You can live together, you can be girlfriend, boyfriend, doesn't matter. But unless you're married, once you break up with that individual, there is no automatic revocation of that beneficiary form.
Right. So this is an unusual situation because the whole point of, we call this an ERISA plan, it's a, say, a 401k under the federal laws, spouses have huge protections.
Mm-hmm.
And in almost everything, the spouse is protected. Except in this scenario, the ex-girlfriend got the $1 million.
Got the whole thing. Not even half.
Right.
The whole thing.
Got all of it. So she stood in a better position than being married.
Makes me wonder, like, as you think about that, like, what other areas of the law, you know, are people better off being married or not married? And you just think of a few off the top of my head, right, as people are thinking about, you know, again, not necessarily directly related to that, but if you're in a committed relationship versus being, let's say, married, which also should be a committed relationship.
But, I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah, you know what I mean. If you're just
semi-committed.
If you're together, yes. Well, you know, like a lot of people, especially as they get older, they don't want to get married. They've been married once already. They want to keep things separate, but they like to be together. There might be some advantages on the income tax side of the equation because if you're married and file a joint return, there can sometimes be a marriage penalty on certain issues versus if you're separate and file single tax returns, there can be a benefit there. Sometimes if an individual was married already, they might be receiving certain Social Security benefits from an ex-spouse where if they get remarried, those Social Security benefits might go away. So it might be better off for them to remain separate as well. But it's interesting to think, are there certain times when you'd be better off being not married, being a, again, a boyfriend or girlfriend and maintaining that as a relationship status versus actually being married.
Well, the point of this, what I wanted to get to, is the importance of a beneficiary form. It's an ironclad contract. And this is not the first of these cases. I mean, this is one of the strangest ones I've seen. I mean, you know, ex-girlfriend from 1989. That's when he broke up with her in 1989. And he just died recently. But checking beneficiary forms is critical. It may be one of the single biggest mistakes people make. You're familiar with other cases like this. A lot of them are in the divorce area. Remember the Kennedy case?
Sure. Supreme Court case again.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. The ex-wife got the money. Even though she said she waived her rights.
She was a liar.
Yeah. And the daughter went to the court. She said, but he didn't want her to get the money. But he didn't change the beneficiary form. And they said the same thing in that case. They said he had every opportunity to change the form, but he chose not to. So, and she got, why did she get the money?
Well, because she was named on the beneficiary form.
Right. And also, you know, this is an ERISA case. You got to look at updates in your life. You got to... You have to make sure your beneficiary forms say what you want them to say. Going back to the ex-girlfriend case, we don't know what he wanted, but apparently that's what he was. He had numerous warnings, or not warnings, communications over the years from the company, over many, many years, over decades.
It would seem to me, like, even in that case, if I was his advisor, right, and he said, yeah, you know, I know this is weird, Jeff, but... I've got this girlfriend from 1989.
And she's now married to somebody else.
And she's now married to someone else. But I really want to leave her this money. My advice still might have been, hey, why don't we fill out a new beneficiary form?
Right, make it clear.
Make it clear, remove any doubt. You know, the beneficiary form is what controls the disposition of assets most of the time, unless it's overridden by some sort of federal or state law, things like that. But, you know, the point is, this is like the last act you have on this earth. Like, you're gone, and this is the last little bit. I can't think of a worse scenario than having your final wishes not fulfilled because it either wasn't clear or because there was ambiguity and you left an opportunity for someone else to interpret what you really wanted to happen.
Right. And you should look at activities in your life. I call them life events, when a birth, a death, a marriage, a divorce, a new grandchild, change in tax laws, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. These things should be updated. They override the wills. Oh, that was another thing. When I said... there were a lot of comments online on the article. Mm-hmm. People said he should have said something in his will.
Yeah, but where there's a will, there's no way it's going to work.
Right.
Yeah.
But these were some professionals on there. Says if he should have said something in the will that she doesn't get it, she still would have got it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the beneficiary form overrides the will. It's a strong document. Now, a little different spin, if this was an IRA, you don't have to, in most cases, other than maybe community property, leave to a spouse.
That's right. Yeah, you can leave to anybody. In fact, there's cases there where people have taken their 401ks, moved them to an IRA, and then named, let's say, their kids, gotten remarried, and said, sorry, new spouse, you don't get the money. It goes to my kids when I'm gone.
Because the ERISA laws protecting spouses do not apply in an IRA.
That's right. Yep. In fact, there's even cases on file where people with non-ERISA plans, things like 403Bs, don't get the same protection.
That's right. There's that famous case. I don't know if it was a case, but I think it was. We used to refer to it. Matter of fact, I still use it. It's from January 2005,
yep.
From the New York Post. Mm-hmm. It was called Pension Pickle. We still give it out at our seminars.
I still remember the headline, Broke Widower Loses $1 Million to In-Law.
Right. Right.
You're a financial advisor, you can't buy headlines that good.
I know. It was a great headline, and you just have to see the headline. So this woman worked, 403B for the New York City school system, accumulated $1 million. She died, and the spouse got disinherited.
Yeah.
He said, how could this possibly be? Well, when she filled out her beneficiary form, it was before she was married, years and years ago. So he wasn't even in the picture. Who did she name? Her brother or mother?
Her mother, her uncle, and her sister, I think.
Yeah, the brother, the sister got the money. The mother and the uncle, I think, predeceased.
Yep.
And the sister got the money because she was on the beneficiary form. He said, but I'm the spouse. I've been married to her for years. Well, she didn't update update the beneficiary form.
Yeah, and I'm sure if people are, again, you know, this is a confusing area, people saying, well, but wait, they were married for more than a year. What's the difference? The difference is state and local 403Bs, like this one, are not covered under ERISA.
Right.
So, you know, what seems as though it's so simple, you know, hey, just write down a name on a piece of paper, is actually dictated by a significant number of laws that all have strange interactions with one another, where ERISA overrides the beneficiary form, but beneficiary form overrides the will, but state law can override. I mean, it's a very complicated mess. And again, the challenge here is not that it seems difficult and is difficult. The challenge is it often seems simple, so people take for granted that what they're doing or what they think they're doing is actually going to happen, when in reality, they're not aware of the nuances and intricacies of the law, and that's when these mistakes occur.
Yeah, make sure to update your beneficiary forms. Make sure you can find them. I've seen problems recently with some mergers and financial planning firms, too, where the documents don't carry over to the next institution, or they list the wrong beneficiary. We just saw a case where they listed the estate rather than the named beneficiaries, and there were millions of dollars there, and nobody noticed it until the guy was dead. Well, you can't change it after that.
Yeah, it looks, anytime there's a question about your beneficiaries, there's a change in institution, a change in life events, etc., then I adhere to one philosophy: when in doubt, fill one out.
Oh, just that's a good one.
Fill out a new beneficiary form. That's it. When in doubt, fill one out.
Yeah,
it can't hurt. If you're saying the same thing, all that will happen is it'll be even more clear that that was your intention.
And keep a copy, because there could even be a problem, even if you think the institution has a copy, it may be an old copy. Who mm-hmm. knows? Before they went through mergers or transitions and things like that.
Yeah. Well, update your beneficiary form. Absolutely critical step, as always. Ed, thanks for updating us on that case. That is a weird one for sure, but a great opportunity to learn from.
That's right. Check your beneficiary forms. Do it now.
That's right. And we'll see you next time on The Great Retirement Debate.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.